can't solve a problem at the same level it was created.
I worked very hard for 10 years to become an overnight sensation.
Your growth has to be number one. That is the first rule.
You need to be able to imagine something being better.
And I think the fear is missing a life and not experiencing your full capacity.
The only way to learn to see is to make assertions, see what happens, learn from it, and then do it again.
You're listening to the Humans 2.0 podcast. This is your host, Mark Metry.
I'm interviewing a good friend of mine and former BMX professional athlete, Josh Perry, 4 times brain tumor survivor. He's been a guest on this podcast twice before. This is his 3rd time, and he's on here for a reason. Super, super amazing. Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to the sponsor of this episode, Restream.io, which is a free live streaming software that you can use to live stream to all social media platforms all at once. I'm using it right now, and they are kind enough to sponsor the episode. Without further ado, Josh, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing well, and thanks for the intro. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, of course, man. I remember, what was it, like last year when you came over to Massachusetts and we went for a walk in this park for like an hour and a half, for like 2 hours, and we just recorded, I think it was the first ever mobile podcast where I brought like my Zoom recorder, I brought my iPhone or something, we just recorded it and walked. It was the first time I ever did that, but then after I was like, man, I should do that more often because, you know, like I feel like when you're walking, you got all that blood flow starts to go to your brain, and then your thoughts start to improve and you start to connect more ideas, at least for me, man. So, dude, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, man. And for the people that don't know you, you know, just give us like a glance, like 3 minutes on just like who you are and like, you know, your biggest struggle, I would say, to date, that's like shaped your life.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I guess in short, you know, I grew up Cape Cod, Massachusetts, so we got the connection there.
Yeah.
Dropped out of high school in my junior year, actually got expelled on accident because I was on a month and a half trip for BMX and my parents and I forgot I had school coming up. That was pretty funny, but that led me to just moving down to North Carolina to pursue BMX with like Dave Meir and the other top professionals. And then after riding X Games and the Dew Tour and all the major contests and traveling around the world, I got diagnosed with a brain tumor that was after hitting my head and MRI accidentally found it. And that's what really sparked my interest in auditing my life in all various ways, which started out with nutrition and then got into exercise after I blew up my knee 3 years later, after a second diagnosis and radiation. And then along the way, I got introduced to Dr. Joe Dispenza about 2015 and everything clicked and the mindset piece came in really clear. And I'd been learning little bits here and there, or I'd say a lot of things and major things because of BMX. The entire time. And then after a third diagnosis to start off 2017, after my best year competing after ACL reconstructive surgery in 2016, I decided to walk away from my dream by my own choice to help other people with a higher purpose that I thought the experience I was going through was leading me to. So that led me in you connecting and to the life I live today of speaking and coaching other people and just creating content to help inspire, not only just inspire, but inspire a new perspective. Because it took things for me to be challenged and pushed to see how I could optimize my life. And I don't want other people to go through that because I believe we have a choice to do so. So today I'm just, you know, I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to have this conversation. And I'm just really, really thankful to be able to learn what I've learned and to be able to share it with others.
Yeah, man. And you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on is because, you know, we live in a crazy time where I don't know the exact statistics, but there are so many people getting cancer. Like it's quite scary to think about. I have an aunt who just got diagnosed and it's crazy, man. And I've never had cancer, so I don't know what it's like, but I imagine it's a pretty terrible feeling. I assume you're pretty lonely. You feel like your life's about to end. And if it's possible, you know, I just want to go back to like, you know, when you first got diagnosed and you were like in your hospital bed, what were you feeling at that time? You know, honestly, and then also like just tell us about like what you were doing in terms of your lifestyle. Like, what did like the unconscious version of you look like in terms of like your habits, your lifestyle that you may think or don't think may have contributed towards you know, getting the brain tumors?
Yeah, that's everything. That's 100% what I believe to have caused the experiences I was going through. So I was 4 months into being 21 years old. I rode X Games the year prior for the first time ever. I'd ridden the Dew Tour since I was 17. I've been around the world, living my dream and some, friends with my idol and childhood hero, Dave Mira. But I was also living a toxic lifestyle. I thought the success I had meant freedom to do whatever I wanted. And now I've understood how discipline actually allows you to experience freedom, because my freedom back then led me to being diagnosed with a brain tumor. Thankfully, I hit my head training one day, and that led to the MRI that discovered it after a year of complaining of headaches, vision loss, and vomiting, and all the classic symptoms now reflecting. But it consisted of, I was 17 and a half or so, 18, when I moved to North Carolina from Massachusetts, and I started drinking heavily, just partying. I was in a college town, East Carolina University, Greenville, North Carolina. I didn't go to college, but I rode and trained during the day, and I partied at night, like every night, basically. Some nights more so than others, because, you know, just keeping up with my friends. But a lot of junk food. My mentality on food was whatever's cheapest and tastes the best, it's just fuel, I'm going to do it.
Right.
I was living on a budget. 2 liter of Dr. Pepper a day was what I chose because it was cheaper than water. But my physical appearance, there was nothing wrong. Like I looked healthy on the outside. My doctors told me I was healthy because I was young and in shape. So being judged by my cover basically almost killed me. It almost cost me my life. So that's been an interesting perspective to change. But the mentality was, I wasn't accepting of it. I wasn't conscious of it. Like you said, I wasn't aware of it, but I was operating from fear, from guilt, and from anger and spite to prove people wrong, especially an abusive stepfather that I grew up majority of my life with. And having people tell me no, I was like, oh, I'll show you. And I somehow made a very unlikely career out of something that not many people get to do, being a professional athlete, especially riding a bicycle. But being diagnosed, you know, that the diagnosis, and this is what's something that's interesting for people to understand. It's difficult, I think, for people to understand. The diagnosis was the most severe part of it. When I was told, I was by myself thinking I'm getting a checkup from an MRI from a concussion. That was it. I was by myself, 21 years old, and they told me you have a brain tumor. They also said, we're not sure if you'll be able to ride your bike again. And at this point, if you want a shot at living, you have to have surgery, or it's just a matter of when you'll die. That was all told to me at once by myself. And that was when I truly experienced fear for my life. Now, over the next 2 weeks before surgery, my surgeon actually moved his schedule around to get me in sooner because it was that bad. It was 8 centimeters long by 4 wide, 4 deep, pushing into my brain for the meninges
layer
of the skull. So it's pretty wild. You see the MRI. I post it every now and then on my Instagram to show people context. But as it transitioned, I remembered my mom had battled cancer, and she's alive and well today, always with a smile on her face. She actually kept it from me when I first left home because she wanted me to pursue my dream. But I came across Lance Armstrong's story, and I was like, another cyclist, brain, lung, and testicular cancer. That's 3 times as worse than mine. And I don't even know if it's malignant or not. It could be benign, which it was, which was great. But I was inspired by those two people that were able to overcome it. And that's what told me, like, oh, I can do this. And so throughout that transition of 2 weeks, it turned into not, you know, what happens if I don't wake up? It was, what happens when I do wake up? What am I going to do differently? And I just kept focusing on my dream. So when it came to surgery, there was no room for fear. Yeah, of course, I was thinking, like, I could die, you know, and that was scary. But I had to say, you know, goodbye to my parents, my friends. I had to give my life to the surgeon. So there was no room to fear, because it was like, I die if I don't do this, but I have a shot at living if I do this. And so obviously went through the surgery. And so it's just really funny because people talk about fear, and that's become a main theme of my messaging. And there was no room for fear at that moment when I had to actually face what was the reality of my life.
Dude, it's really crazy that you say that. And it's kind of like, it's almost kind of like the freedom of fear in a way. And I think a lot of the times, like when we think of fear, it's like something that, you know, stops us from doing what we want to do. But I think in a lot of times, in sort of like these really extreme scenarios, fear can actually be a really powerful like force. And like, I know for me, like personally, for me, my rock bottom was going for walks in the most terrible parts of Boston at night because I wanted to die. And that's a very scary scenario, but I relate to what you just said, because in that moment, I didn't necessarily like have fear. And it's almost like when you're in that state, you then realize that if you can put yourself sort of unknowingly in a position where you should be terrified, but then you're not terrified because you realize what it is. I think there's like a lot of freedom within that. I feel like that could be a major like motivator for a lot of people. And you know, I want to go back to something that you said about your lifestyle in terms of you, you know, gaining some of this success and then, you know, going out there and doing what, you know, most people in their 20s do of like partying and stuff. And, you know, I definitely had my fair share of that. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned about that is, you know, so many of us are just told, whether explicitly or just kind of alongside of society, of like, oh, you know, when you're young, it doesn't matter what you're eating. It doesn't matter, you know, what you do, because basically when you're an adult, you can just like figure all that stuff out later when your health sucks. But it's like, that is not the answer. And I've heard from many people, whether it's Dr. David Perlmutter or some other really smart people, that say, you know, a lot of these different issues that may either manifest now or later when you're an adult, a lot of them start based on your lifestyle choices in your 20s. And I'm very grateful for myself that when I was like 18, I saw my body and my brain basically break down, because I'm grateful that happened to then be like, no, you gotta totally shift your life. And, you know, now I'm trying to be the healthiest I can for the rest of my life. And so I'm curious to ask you, like, what did you learn about like health and nutrition that maybe like shifted your perspective, that made it more solutions oriented? Because I think a lot of people, you know, speaking from an outside perspective, especially something like a brain tumor, I feel like a lot of people think it's like, it's game over. Like there's no hope, there's no future, there's no faith. You're going to be on this hospital bed for the next couple of years and then you're going to die. But what was it about, like, whether it was health, nutrition, or something different, that made you see like a solution, that made you see like a light in the tunnel? I'm sure it was like a gradual progression. But what did you find that was like solutions oriented that you could do differently?
Well, when it finally clicked, it was actually Dr. Perlmutter's book, Grain Brain, in 2013, that like the way he broke down blood sugar, inflammation, stress, and the brain, it clicked for me. I was still in a fearful state of it returning because it had already recurred twice at that point. And the way he elegantly broke down in a simple manner for someone like myself to understand about, you know, the food and the lifestyle you live, whether that's lack of sleep, that's mental stress, that's emotional stress, it all comes down to stress. And the term he used I had never heard of at that point was epigenetics, the ability to affect your genetic expression, which we know now is about 70-75% of our genetic makeup can be influenced by lifestyle. Lifestyle is not just diet and what you do for work. It's how you mentally and emotionally operate in your physical body, which is broken down with nutrition, exercise, sleep, all that stuff. So it's just coming down to stress. And that getting to Dr. Joe Dispenza's work a little bit more deeper into quantum physics and how, you know, stress affects all these things. It just was like, oh, maybe I caused this. Maybe the lifestyle of me emotionally and mentally growing up, and then adding in the abuse physically from BMX, and then adding the alcohol, the copious amounts of sugar, all this stuff, it just fueled the fire after igniting it. And now Dr. Perlmutter is talking about how you can suppress that and sometimes reverse it. And that's what I really got passionate about, the ketogenic diet and the state of ketosis, which I've come to learn a lot of context around that now. I don't need to follow keto macros because I'm not epileptic or dealing with cancer. I can get into ketosis here and there in very different ways. But the ability for ketones to signal genes in a certain way, especially when it comes to the brain and fueling the brain on a mitochondrial level, that was everything to me. And that's why the third diagnosis in 2017, which left me now with four tumors in my skull today, I knew I had Gamma Knife from the radiation 2012 in my back pocket. I've been working with them for a while. The company, great support there. I knew that was an option. Surgery wasn't an option because they weren't as large as the first tumor. It wasn't worth the risk. So I was like, all right, well, let me do a deep dive, test my blood, get MCT oil and powder to help promote ketone production even more, exogenous ketones, all these things. And then year after year, MRIs have showed no progression whatsoever. And I'm confident I'll see the regression happening soon. So yeah, thank you. It's just, it's powerful because that was proof of everything I was learning from Dr. Perlmutter, everything I've been learning from Dr. Joe the last 5 years, of like the ability to influence stress up or down will have profound manifestations in your reality. And I still, it's been almost 4 years now since the last diagnosis, and I haven't done anything but just change my lifestyle, actually meditate, which I'm not going to be one of those people that say I meditate every day. I've gone bouts of like 2 months in a row straight. I actually haven't meditated in like a week or so, but my lifestyle and mentally and emotionally has just drastically changed. And my diet, it's just a non-negotiable for me. 99% of the time I eat the way I talk about. And I'd say 100% because I do talk about, if you're not epileptic, if you're not dealing with cancer, if you're not obese and dealing with, you know, diabetes, you can have indulgence from time to time, live your life. But more times than not, I'm going to do what I know is going to be best for me. And that's just how I live my life today, which stemmed from these experiences.
Yeah, man. And it's really interesting. Like when I found out like the role that, you know, like the, like just what you put in your mouth has like throughout your life. And like in my book, Screw Being Shy, like I cite so many different kinds of studies that directly show there's a major correlation between eating junk food and experiencing psychological distress. Yeah. And there's so many studies I link in my book from kids to adults. Not so much on the cancer side, but just experiencing things in terms of anxiety, insomnia, depression. It's what I lived with. And I know there's no such thing as like a quote unquote universal sort of diet. I think diet is very much like a tool depending on what you're trying to do, where you are, except for maybe avoid all junk food, avoid all like artificial crap.
Fundamentals that all human beings should be following, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But like for someone who's like, who hasn't heard much of this, like what would be your advice for someone who has cancer in terms of like a diet to follow, who doesn't really know that much about ketosis?
My first advice is to do your research. You know, don't just accept everything as fact, like actually look into it. And then start looking into experts like Dr. Dom DiAgostino, Travis Christofferson, like people that study cancer and metabolic therapies for cancer. And ironically enough, Dr. Dom hosts an event called Metabolic Health Summit every year that has all the leading experts in metabolic health, whether it's dealing with the heart, cancer, brain, whatever. And a lot of their work is, I think, majority of it's all based on the metabolic implications of these different ailments that we deal with. So it's just do your research. And then ultimately it comes down to what you believe about your life. And it doesn't matter if it's someone with cancer, someone dealing with a breakup, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, for the majority of us, we can shift how we experience life based on the thoughts that we give energy to. And I know your book and you in general, you and I talk about this all the time. Like it really comes down to auditing, like what your beliefs are, what your day-to-day thoughts are, because that drives chemical reactions that we call emotions. And that's what the body feels. And when you aren't aware of that, you're in autopilot and it's negatively affecting you. It's just a matter of time when things start to go downwards. And so I think just really becoming aware of yourself inside and out and like doing your research and just, you know, doing your best to see what makes sense to you and what you can do and talk to other people. Like when I went through ACL surgery, I had an athletic trainer telling me I needed a cadaver. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that, you know. And then I talked to some of my friends, professional athletes that had the same surgery on both knees. They're like, no, go the hamstring graft. Your hamstring goes back. It's the strongest. And then Jackie, my girlfriend, who was my other athletic trainer at the time, she presented all this research to back that up. And I talked to my surgeon. He was like, yes, no cadaver, definitely hamstring. You're too young. And that's what I went with. But I gained experience from research, from the literature, and talking with other people that had the same experience. And I think that's really important.
So do your own research. I think that's so important. But I also think like that can also be quite challenging, because I feel like, you know, it's like it's challenging for multiple reasons. I feel like if you don't have the motivation, which we can talk about. I feel like a lot of the times, like you just start Googling stuff, you see all kinds of articles, you see different podcasts, and then it's like 16 different doctors and they have 16 different opinions, and then try to like figure out like what's neutral ground. And then I feel like a lot of people who aren't that interested, but do the research anyway, I feel like a lot of the times that often becomes almost like a, I don't want to say an excuse, but I feel like a lot of people, like they research like, hey, what's the best diet? And then they're like, oh, I don't know what to choose. So then they just end up eating whatever they're going to eat. And they almost like just deny that. And so, yeah, you know, I think like the biggest thing about this whole food and this diet thing is it has so much to do with our emotions. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's something that, unless it's like one of like those eating disorder, like Instagram pages or something, I feel like that's something that is not touched upon a lot. And I know for me personally, like, you know, my parents always taught me to like never do drugs, never drink alcohol. And so I never really did that stuff. But for me, my biggest like vice was food. And I never knew that food was bad for you. And so, yeah, definitely do your own research. But I also feel like people should just experiment, you know, because there's only a certain amount of research that will prove or disprove what you know true to be your body by experimenting. And so, yeah, man, it's really interesting. It'd definitely be confusing for some people, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, it doesn't matter what topic it is, you can get whatever answer you're looking for from various different avenues you choose to go down. That's why I do my best to share about context, perspective, you know, because what I'm saying works for me and many other people, but it may not work for you or other people. And what I'm saying now, I may change later on. And that was something Dr. Perlmutter said years ago. He's like, I'm a scientist. This is what I know now. This is what I believe is working now. We have data to show that. We may learn, you know, 10 years from now, something better, or that this is not the case long term. But that's science. Like, you just learn with the information. And I don't think being in that position, I don't believe that getting overwhelmed with the information, which I went through, that's why I took steps to learn more and more so I could think for myself. I don't think that's ever an excuse to give up and just do whatever, even though you know it's bad or not. Like, if you want to live, if you want a better quality of life, you need to do your best to optimize that. Don't just give up. I mean, that was something that was taught to me very vividly and painfully with BMX. You know, you fall, you hit the ground from 10, 20 feet in the air. Well, if you want it bad enough, you'll get up and try again. People say we're crazy, but it's not. We have a vision we're working towards. So I don't think it's ever an excuse to give up on something you truly want, especially when it comes to your life, just because things are complicated. I mean, that's life. Like, life, being a human being is complicated. Being in a relationship is complicated. So that's why I do what I do, to share what I can and to share context and perspective around it, and not to make things right or wrong, because what may be right for you may be wrong for me. And so I just think it comes down to learning how to think for yourself and really focus on what's important. Is the temporary unenjoyment of learning something, does that outweigh the long-term success and gratification of that hard effort for your health? What, like, which one matters more? Like, being temporarily satisfied or delayed gratification?
And it's super important. And I love talking about this because, you know, we live in America where there's literally, I don't know what the exact stats are, but there's literally over like 100 million people who are metabolically unhealthy and have all kinds of chronic illnesses. And, you know, for me, what I believe in terms of, so I'd love to get your take, is like, in mindset and in life, we always say, like, don't take the path of least resistance. But I think in terms of switching people's habits, I actually think it's worth taking the path of least resistance. And like, what I mean is, I remember when I was like obese and I had all these kinds of problems, and I started to like research and I felt so overwhelmed in terms of like diet. And I was like, should I go vegan? Should I go carnivore? All this stuff. I ended up going plant-based for like 2 months. I felt terrible. But then I found out about Bulletproof, and I found out about Bulletproof coffee, and I was like, there's no way that Bulletproof coffee is even real. What do you mean you put butter in your coffee? But it was like, it was so easy that I could do it. And then all of a sudden I drank it, and then I was like, oh my God, I felt my brain turn on for the first time in my life. And so I think a lot of the times too, it's all about like the, in terms of this stuff, like realistically speaking, I think it's all about like the path of like least resistance, right? So it's like, whether it's in terms of food or whatever, if you've struggled about this your whole life, find like whatever's easiest for you. And like, for example, I was on a podcast yesterday about like entrepreneurship and sales, and we were talking about nutrition. I told them, like, if you've never eaten healthy, like literally try to find one healthy food that you love, that you would eat all the time, and like just focus on that. And I feel like a lot of the times people just like want to jump to these extremes that aren't even the most conducive for their life. Like, someone will go from like obese, eating the American standard diet, and they're like, I'm going to eat carrots and celery and peanut butter and become a rabbit. And it's like, dude, that's not going to realistically work, right? So I feel like a lot of the times we have to take like a realistic approach, and that may look different for each person. But I ultimately think, you know, this is a major problem, because I think the health and wellness industry, I think it's great, but I also think it's extremely confusing. And there's like so many of like these fads that are coming out, and there's like all these foods that like look healthy just because they say organic on them, when in reality, they may not even be healthy. And so, yeah, man, it's definitely a complicated topic, but I'm a big fan of like trying to find like the most realistic, like simple, smallest thing that someone can do that can at least get them like on that runaway path to at least doing it. And then eventually, you know, like doing it. Like, for example, I used to be a major, major addict for ice cream. I would literally sit down and I would eat a pint of ice cream every single day. And then there was a time where like I stopped doing that. And then what I did was I would just make ice cream out of frozen fruit. And so some people will tell you, hey, if you eat like a pound of frozen fruit, that's not the best thing for you. But it's like, hey, I'd rather eat that than ice cream. And then now I eat this ice cream called it's keto ice cream. I believe the company is called like Keto Pint. It has no artificial. Lighten? No.
I say there's a couple brands out now that are pretty popular, but yeah.
Yeah, I found one brand of it's like literally called Keto. I think that's what the company's called. Okay. It's the only form of ice cream I found that has no artificial crap, no sugar, any of that stuff. And so, yeah, I think this is going to get better, like as capitalism and as like the industry matches. Yeah. And now there's all kinds of demand, like, you know, cookies and all these companies that are like, you know, listening, and they're like, okay, we should shift our products. Yeah. But yeah, man, it's super interesting. And I think, like, you know, cancer, I think diet is definitely like a major source, but not just diet, right? Like stress too. And I've spoken with so many people who have said, you know, we have, you know, there's so many mechanisms of stress throughout our body and our psychology. And a lot of it comes from, you know, trauma that we experienced from a young age that we didn't know how to process. We didn't know how to deal with. Maybe it had something to do with our parents. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it has to do with our work, our everyday stresses. And I know for me, like last year, I caught myself just like not really meditating, not really like going for walks, not really, you know, doing the things that I have been taught to do to relieve my stress. And I remember like I had this moment where I was just eating lunch, and I was eating like this like healthy salad. I had like a piece of salmon on it, the same stuff that I always eat. And all of a sudden I felt like my stomach like really, really, really hurt. And I'm like, wait, what happened? And I go to the bathroom for like 20 minutes and I come back and I'm like, wait, I'm eating like the same food that I've always eaten. But what I changed was like the amount of stress in my life. And so, you know, this can be a pretty wide range topic, but for someone listening to this who sort of has the awareness to be like, you know, I'm going throughout like a series of emotions and thoughts that I know are not that good for me. Like, what would you say to that person to like help them like sit down and kind of audit their emotions? Or is that the best track? Or like, what's the best way for someone to gain clarity? Because I know it can be a little bit like confusing if you've never like understood the real power of emotions. A lot of the times, if people aren't exposed to this world, they feel like thoughts and emotions aren't really like a real thing that impacts their life. It's just like what's going on. And so what would be your best advice or like one step that someone can take if they sort of realize that they have maybe a lot of unhealthy emotions or emotions that really put them in a lot of like negative states?
Yeah. So before I answer that, leading into that, you mentioned a bunch earlier that mentioned or that came to mind for two things. One, we want momentum, right? So the path of least resistance isn't about just what's easy to do. It's like it's gaining momentum. So when people talk about, hey, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, how can I be more motivated, Mark? I get that question all the time. Like, what motivates you? It's not about motivation. Motivation to me is just elevated energy in the moment. That's why so many people go to Tony Robbins events and then leave and go back to their old ways. I've seen that at keto events. People are all motivated to be keto and then they go eat bread rolls out after the event. And I'm just like, what happened? It makes sense now because it's this heightened energy. But momentum is generating that energy more and more to where you start shifting your beliefs about yourself, which comes into my next point. I wrote it, taking your advice. I've been writing LinkedIn articles, well thought out, long form articles that aren't as easy sometimes when I'm trying to talk on camera. But I wrote one recently titled Why Identity Should Be the Focus and Not Outcomes. And I got that from James Clear in his book, Atomic Habits. And it makes so much sense to me now. When we focus on something and not the type of person we want to become that has that life or lives that life, then that's why we fall back and we go back to our old ways. But when we're focused on momentum and asking ourselves, which leads into your question, am I being the type of person that has the experience of life that I want, that has the thing, that thinks the way that version of me wants? Like, we focus on that, then we can, you know, get the low hanging fruit. We can do one thing at a time, build momentum, feel good about ourselves. Like, human beings, they want to feel gratification. They want to feel like they're accomplishing something. They want to feel like they're progressing towards something. When you're going from standard American diet to, let's say, keto or carnivore or vegan, that's not sustainable, because your model of the world is being reflected in what you see every day and how you think and feel about yourself. And then you're trying to do something that opposes that. That's why affirmations don't work if your body doesn't really feel it. If you don't believe it, but you're like, I'm healthy, or I'm abundant. And then you're like, no, I'm not. Fuck that. Like, I don't feel that. That's not going to work, because the mind and body are in conflict. It's not coherent. So simple strategies just to start with is sit down and just write out what you want to be true about your life. Don't judge it. Don't validate why or it's not true or it is true. Don't compare yourself. Just think about what does Josh want in his life? What is the way he wants to think? How does he want to feel every day? What does he want his experience to be like? And then map out, you know, what that takes. Am I being that way? Get into the consciousness of being, like, just being aware of it. Am I acting the way that I want to? Because it doesn't come down to, I wrote another article, thanks to you, about why thinking, or the if X then Y thinking doesn't really work. Because you're waiting for something to change your beliefs about yourself, rather than you take the quantum physics model Dr. Joe talks about. You think and feel the way you want to later on. That will speed up time to where that outcome becomes a reality for you, not the other way around. You don't think, when I get that number in my bank account, I'll be secure, confident, and happy. When I lose that weight, I'll be the same things. No, you feel that way now, and you do your best to think that way, and ask yourself, am I aligned with the outcomes I want? And focus on the identity. And that, if anyone anyone listening has not listened to or read Atomic Habits, that changed the whole game for me as my personal life, and then being a coach with other people, because I used to do the same thing when I started out. That's why you probably noticed I removed myself from the keto world in terms of content. I don't talk about it. 95% of my content has to do with mindset and identity and its actions, because I was putting myself in a box and I was avoiding the people that really needed help, because I was saying, you got to change everything about you right now. And then they may do it for a week. The driven people will do it. And then I was, why am I getting people coming back for the same problems after we just accomplished everything? It didn't change their identity. And so what James talks about is, every time you take an action, it's a vote towards the type of person you want to become, whether you're aware of that or not. So if you can just sit down, and I have a whiteboard right there where I have personal and professional goals. And a lot of it comes down to the mindset and the emotions. If you just sit down and ask yourself, what are all the things you want? Okay, cool. What are all the experiences you want? Okay, what are the ways you want to think on a daily basis? Do you want to wake up motivated, excited, happy, confident? Or do you want to continue looking at your phone first thing in the day, comparing yourself, judging yourself, and feeling like shit, and then affirming your limiting beliefs? So think about that. And then think about, what are the ways you want to feel? What are the experiences you want with relationships? What career qualities do you want? And that's why I just think it's so important to focus on, you get the goal, the outcome, that sets the target, that sets the sights. But then get deeper than that. Focus on the identity that has that. Anyone that's like Michael Jordan, LeBron, or all these people like Simon Sinek, like yourself, you focus on the identity. You don't focus on the outcome. The outcome is a positive consequence of the identity that has that life. And actually, in one of Dr. Joe's seminars that I was watching, a woman was like, all right, well, if this and that, we're meditating and all this, like, why don't I have the house in Austin I have? He's like, because that is why. The person that has a house in Austin doesn't show up like this. And then you could see in her face just change.
Man, it's so crazy. And I remember I learned this lesson when I became really financially successful, and then I still felt like a piece of crap. And that really led me to, like, learning about all the people and the concepts that you mentioned. And it really just led me of, like, I can't wait for this. I need to become this now, whether it is true or not, and have, like, this internal sense within me, regardless of what's happening in the external world. And if you do that enough times, then your external world will match your internal reality. And it's hard. I think it's hard to, like, get that across to people who haven't had an experience like that, because a lot of the times it's like it doesn't seem natural, right? Well, it's like, you know, if you've lived your life doing something for 10 years and then all of a sudden you switch and you switch that behavior, it's not going to feel natural at all, even though it may be natural for who you really, you know, want to be in the world. And so I love that. And I love what you said about, you know, identity. I'm a big fan of Atomic Habits. I've had James on this podcast.
Awesome.
He crushed it. And, you know, for me, the biggest thing that I learned in regards to that is like, I would rather have a long-term sustainable sense of success and happiness over just wanting to feel cool and happy, like right now in front of you or in front of, you know, whoever I'm trying to, my ego wants to flaunt to.
Yeah.
And that's really led me to like thinking in terms of lifelong habits. Right. And so I think like this whole thing with like COVID, for example, is waking up a lot of people about their health. You know, like I think the CDC says something like 90% of people who like really suffer from COVID usually have like an underlying metabolic or chronic illness or something like that that they already had. And so I think a lot of people are waking up to like, oh, I need to take care of my health.
Yeah.
And like the mindset around that, it shouldn't necessarily be like, oh, you know, I'm obese or I'm unhealthy. Let me, you know, start eating healthy now so that I can not be obese and not be healthy. But it's just like, I'm going to eat this way my entire life so that I can be healthy forever. And I think like, that's really it. It's like a lot of us, we're always like in this mindset of just sort of like going along, like with the flow of things, like in a not so great way until something breaks, until something,
that's what happens.
Same thing with me. Yeah. Same thing with, I bet, like a lot of other people, unless like you had like the perfect parents, which is like extremely, extremely hard. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is like identity and long term. And so it's like, do you understand that you don't actually do that? I think to like look cool, like you do that to feel healthy. You know what I mean? It's like for me, whether it's me doing this podcast or like me posting on LinkedIn, I don't make my podcast to get, you know, whatever it is, 100 listeners or 1,000 listeners today or a week from now. I'm doing it so that I can constantly have these conversations, constantly refine myself so that I can become a better person and become a better educator, someone who is more capable of dispersing that information at a basic level that people can understand. And so when I think about it from that long-term perspective, it makes it much more fun. Whereas compared to if I'm just like, oh, I've got to do this interview, I've got to do this podcast, whatever it is. And this is really what I have learned in my life of like, there are people out there in the world who objectively on paper, you would want to switch their life with. I mean, I wouldn't, but a lot of people out there, they see people with like houses and cars and super hot, whatever models. And they're like, oh, I would totally want to switch my life. But you would be surprised to see like what that person's mindset is. Maybe they hate their life. Maybe they get anxious every time they look at their house. Like we have no idea. And so for me, it's all about like lifelong habits that have, like you said, have nothing, almost nothing to do with an outcome or have to do with almost like an internal outcome that, yeah, I'm going to set for myself 10 years. And when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, I don't want to be the coolest person. I don't want to be super successful necessarily like right now, but in 10 years from now, 20 years from now, the person who I am becoming, that for me is my ultimate goal. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's almost as if like your decisions in life get really clear and you're able to gain clarity almost over like the daily fog of like the thousands of decisions that are forced upon us. And it's like, you know, just think about it. You open your phone, you're on Instagram, all of a sudden, like, you know, you literally have companies that are spending billions of dollars to basically figure out how do we get this person to click yes or to click this or to buy this. And so it's like from the moment we're sort of created, we're flooded with literally thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of different decisions. And those decisions may be different than the ones that we actually want to do based on sort of like this lifelong identity of who we want to become. And so, dude, it's so tough. And especially now with like, whether it's COVID, whether it's the election, whether it's like all of like this constant information, this overload, this this sort of like this I had Robert Greene on, and he called it viral emotions. And it's sort of like this cycle that has always happened in human history. But I think now with more details, with more information, I feel like it can stop a lot of people from becoming that. And they get sort of lost in like this digital vortex that stops them from being themselves. And I know I definitely struggle with this myself. And so, dude, I'm curious to ask you, like, you know, whether it was in April or whatever, like kind of during quarantine or like throughout this really interesting year, what have you sort of been doing? What have you done now to like keep yourself balanced, like keep yourself sort of focused and not sort of like, you know, look at, you know, what the, like what crazy thing the president of the United States just tweeted like an hour ago.
So to start off with April, I hired on a coach. She's well trained and versed in NLP and business, and she's a professional actress. So I hit the jackpot with working with her, and she's been amazing. Awesome. And she really challenged me with these things. She assigned homework to read Atomic Habits back in April, and I just was blown away. So like, I just continued to focus.
I think Josh stepped out here for a second. I think we're having a little bit of technical issues. No worries though. Hey, Josh, you're back. Sorry about that. Yeah, can you repeat that again?
Yeah, so hiring my coach back in April, she just taught me a lot about the mental and emotional aspects of behavior and how it drives behavior. And then she assigned me homework to read Atomic Habits, and then I learned more about identity. And so what I've been doing through this whole time is what I've been learning more and more over the last, I'd say, 4 to 5 years since getting introduced to Dr. Joe's work and Dr. LaPera, who I know you're connected with as well. But the same thing is just focusing on who you truly want to become, because the ego is really tricky, right? It's there to protect us. It tells us we want the money, we want the car, we want the house. But if you're really honest with yourself and you ask yourself, well, why is that? Because you don't just want a car to have a car. Like it's mentally and emotionally deeper than that. And when you start focusing on those outcomes mentally and emotionally about, you know, the identity, and you focus on that, it's like you said, like you build this identity that's going to have those things. And maybe those things, the things that you said you wanted, don't really matter anymore because you're confident and secure with who you are. And so I've just been extremely focused, whether it's meditating, it's journaling, it's conversation like this, it's just being more aware in all that I do, or challenging myself to do things outside of my comfort zone to break the addiction of stress. It's just being focused on what type of person do I want to think like, feel like, and what life do I want to have right now? And then just really focusing on that type of person, the identity. And it's crazy because, like you said earlier, our external reality is a reflection of our inner world. And the more I've focused on my inner world and changing it and optimizing it to the way I want, I've seen things change. I've seen my relationships improve with my family, my friends, and strangers. I've seen my bank account change. I've seen my business change in terms of working with people. And I've seen my just experiences and now that I'm not riding anymore, which I don't know if we mentioned that earlier, I stopped riding in January before COVID just to take a year off to see what life's like without it. I picked up bowling after 15 years. I grew up in the bowling alley, bowling leagues and all that. And it's been almost a year now. And just yesterday I got done with my calls, and normally I'd be like, I got to work more. I got to create more content. You know, Gary, he's telling Ray, tell me I got to do all this. And I was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to go bowl, practice a little bit. I got league tonight. I was like, I'm going to go do that. And I had a great time. And then I made another connection after. Like, and it's just like these experiences. And it's not about the outcomes. The outcomes, again, are a positive consequence. That's why I'm so thankful for James's desire to write that book. And something you mentioned earlier that I think is huge as a part of our identity now is to serve a higher purpose than ourself. That's what led me walking away from BMX. Everything I worked for, sacrificed, all the pain, blood, sweat, and tears, literally, to achieve that, I walked away from it. And then this year, I literally walked away from it. My bike is right behind me, and I haven't touched it on a ramp since January. And I'm okay with that because I'm working towards a vision in my mind that's a higher purpose in myself. For so long, I was selfish in the fact that I was living in fear and anger and all these negative emotions, limiting beliefs, that I was focused on myself. My awareness was so narrowed onto me, and my ego was there to protect me. And really breaking through, that's what's opened my world to all these possibilities. I believe that's what led us to connecting and just so many other amazing things that's happened in my life. And that's entirely what I've been focusing on the last year, this year, COVID. Now it doesn't matter. Like COVID's going to come and go. Other problems are going to come and go. Like, it's not like, oh, COVID's gone. Like, life's great again. Like, life's great now. Like,
yeah,
we still have the potential for all the same problems in our lives. And so really, when you focus on, you know, your inner world, your outer world reflects that. And, you know, I get examples all the time of, but what about this dramatic example that conflicts with that? And it's like, that you can't control what happens to you. The work that I'm explaining or I'm sharing and I'm learning and I'm experiencing is about what you do when things like that happen, how you respond. And it's to the majority of us. Obviously, people that don't have access to this podcast or an iPhone, you know, they're maybe never going to hear this. Like, that, it's irrelevant. It's like Gary Vee talks about, and like, that's the reality. What are you going to do about it, though?
Yeah, I
can say that confidently when I face death more than once. And I still live with four brain tumors. Some people would say you're crazy for doing all you do, but it's my choice. So focusing on what I want to experience in my life is what allows me to experience that more so than not, and have a higher probability of achieving the things I want in my life, whether that's external or internal.
Yeah. And I love that. And yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I would say is, like, you know, if I didn't do everything that I've been doing in terms of, like, the last 4 or 5 years of my life of working on my mental, emotional, physical, spiritual life, and COVID came, dude, I'd be destroyed. And so I'm so grateful, because it really hasn't, you know, other than obvious things, it hasn't really made that much of a impact on my life. But I think this year is definitely, like, waking a lot of people up to the reality. Josh, we're running low on time, but real quick, I want to go back to something that you said that was really interesting. And you said, the addiction of stress. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So this was something that Dr. Joe brought to my awareness in the lecture. He talked about, like, being addicted to stress. Like, so actually this is great, because I want to mention this concept earlier, TARE: thoughts, emotions, actions, reality. So when you have a thought, you produce chemicals that then promote or produce emotions. Those are the feelings. That's the language of the body. That's what we feel. That signals the brain to confirm what you're thinking is what you're feeling. And then you behave a certain manner because of the way you think and the way you feel, which creates the reality we live in. So if you want to change, you need to be aware of your thoughts, change your thoughts over time. It'll happen. It's not about perfection. It's about what James talked about, a majority vote towards what you want. And so what was the question? Because I want to explain that, but I want to make sure I
Addressed the question correctly. What do you mean by breaking the addiction of stress?
Breaking the addiction of stress. So growing up in the environment I did, an abusive stepfather, insecure, thought I was stupid, thought this, then the brain tumor diagnosis affirming things like that I'm unhealthy. Certain events that happened that affirmed my belief that I wasn't smart enough, dropping out of high school, all these things, I literally became addicted to stress. Like, and Dr. Joe breaks this down in his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, how these chemicals signal the cells. And then when your cells aren't getting that signal, then you start freaking out. And then you unconsciously do things to get that hit of whatever that chemical was. For me, it was stress. It was cortisol, adrenaline. And now I had to work through that when I stopped with BMX. I was creating adrenaline and cortisol every day on very high levels on top of the mental and emotional stress. And so when things were great, you know, my bills are paid, I'm increasing my revenue. I got a great relationship with Jackie. I have an amazing puppy. My family is all healthy and well. They all have their jobs still. Like, everything's great. I'm done with my work. I got to do something. And it's just uncomfortable. And I had to really accept that and break through that, to where yesterday, the middle of the day, one of the beauties of being an entrepreneur, working for yourself, I was able to go bowl for an hour and a half. And I didn't feel guilt about it. That was another thing, the guilt, which created the stress, the addiction to it. So I literally had to break that connection, that addiction on a cellular level, by auditing my thoughts, which changed my emotions over time, which drove my behavior to be different. And anyone that hasn't read Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, I don't know if you read that or not.
Yeah.
That is a game changer once you get through the quantum physics part.
Yeah, dude. And I genuinely think that, you know, what you're saying is, like, one of the most important things that, like, entrepreneurs need to know, because I think the reality is that a lot of them are successful because they have, like, this addiction to stress, which then forces them to do different things. But then that also comes with, you know, burnout, never feeling happiness, always feeling dissatisfied, even though you're accomplishing a ton. I know I definitely, you know, experience this. And I think COVID really taught me this, you know, like, when all the travel, all the speaking, all the events stopped. And it was just like me in my house. I was like, wow, I'm still addicted to, like, this need of stress. And, like,
well, we're addicted to these things too. They distract us from the way we're thinking and feeling.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because it's like, you know, you get a thought that maybe you should address, be honest about, but then it's infinitely easier to, you know, go on your phone and tweet something or LinkedIn or do something. And so I genuinely think like what you just said, like that's the biggest skill that I think like entrepreneurs specifically like need to learn, need to master, need to like hire you to help them with that, because like I definitely experienced that, and it's like a big problem that I see for entrepreneurs at all levels. And like, it's I like to think of it as like a double-edged sword of like, yeah, you can use that sword to like do a lot of great things in the world, but you also got to make sure that that sword doesn't cut you back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times that's what happens. And so, dude, I love everything that you just said, man. This conversation's got me so excited.
Well, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate the conversation, the connection. And you and Kerwin Ray are two people that I love extremely on a human level, but what you promote as being entrepreneurs. Like, I see the two of you leading that way, just really about consciousness. And like, you just did a post recently about the 168-hour work week or whatever. And in there you had like sleep, exercise, meditation, reading, like all these things that most people, including myself in the beginning of this, was like, I don't have time for sleep. I don't have time to meditate. And that's a common thing I hear with my clients. And it's like, well, are you going to have time for, you know, being sick or not being here for your family later on? Like that's a real reality. And it's tough love, but like, that's the beauty of it. Like, you need to be challenged. And I think the work that you do, it really inspires me, but it also allows me to feel really just better about the world, because so many people, Gary Vee talked about this, like the negativity is louder, but we need to make positivity louder. And I see people like yourself, and that's what I aim to do. And I don't sugarcoat things. I'm not just like, oh, my life's amazing, you got to have a think positive. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. I share the ups and downs. I share about my brother more openly now, and I've inspired other people to share about family or friends that they've had that have committed suicide. Same, like things like that. Like, I'm not just going to sugarcoat things. My social media, my LinkedIn, whatever, it's not a catalog of my best moments. It's me. And that's something, even with the keto space, that's why I don't talk about keto much anymore, because it's not about being perfect. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about being real and then challenging yourself. That's why you and I think do a great job at being, here's my downfalls, here's my flaws, here's my lowest points, here's what I learned from it. I'd rather you learn from my mistakes than go through them yourself. And for me, literally almost dying and being told you're going to die, I don't want people to ever experience that. It was great for me. I've learned now, as able to overcome that and learn from it. But I don't want people to ever be in a situation where their life's at risk, where their family's at risk. And I think that the more we have these conversations, the more we do what we do and inspire other people to open up and do the same, the more that's just going to create a ripple effect around people. And whether they're an entrepreneur, they want to be a teacher or whatever, it's the same principles. You got to take care of yourself inside and out.
Truth, man. Truth, man. I love everything you said, and I appreciate the kind words, and I acknowledge you for all the work that you've been doing. And from the get-go, like 2017, you've always been a real authentic, you know, role model of this stuff, for real, you know. And I know a lot of people, and I think the reality is that I think this year, I feel like a lot of people kind of like show their true colors. And I feel like in terms of that, I've definitely, I don't want to necessarily say distance, but I feel like I definitely have in terms of certain people in this like space, because I just don't really agree with what they're saying. And I don't necessarily think it's helpful, but you're not one of those. And you're someone who, light, dark, you're willing to talk about it because that's the truth. And ultimately, if people don't hear the truth and they're just fed this sugar coat, you don't help anybody, you know. Yeah. And whether that's our own experiences when we were kids or right now, you know, I think we both have sort of the life experience to do that and speak honestly and just be like, hey, we're humans, we're out here, we're living our lives, you know, and then just report and try to be honest with people. And a lot of times when you do that, you really inspire people. It takes a while, you know, it takes years and years and years. But like I said, like at the beginning, like I'm not doing this podcast to get, you know, 10,000 downloads on my podcast this week. I'm doing this because, you know, 10 years from now, if like one person listens to this, or if I'm better somehow, if I'm shifted as a result of this, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah. Josh, I appreciate that. Yeah,
of course, man. So two things before we close off. one, share with people like where they can learn more about you. I'll make sure to tag your LinkedIn profile on this page. But then second, I don't know if you remember, I don't know if we did this last time, but I usually have my guests leave the audience with some sort of like a simple action or an exercise or even a question that they can ask themselves, if you have one for the audience.
Yeah. So the question, I think what we talked about earlier, just start your day or start any moment of your day, like whatever comes to mind, just ask yourself, am I being the type of person that has what I want in life? Just simple. And just be honest with yourself.
Okay. Awesome, man. Where's the best place for people to reach out or see if anything you've got going on?
My website is just joshperrybmx.com, and all my social media is just joshperrybmx. Funny story about my domain name. I went to get joshperry.com, and there's one of those people holding it for like $2,000-$4,000, whatever it is up to now. I haven't checked.
Oh, man.
So I was like, I'll just stick to the Josh Perry BMX. So Josh Perry BMX.
Yeah, at least for now. Maybe in 10 years. Yeah, we'll see.
And actually, my Instagram, the same thing. Josh Perry, he's held it since 2013, and he won't respond to my DMs. He's not active. I don't even know if he exists anymore. But so it's the same challenge. So I just keep everything Josh Perry BMX.
Dude, you got this, man. Josh, dude, so honored to have you on. I see the comments. A lot of people loved this conversation, man. I wish you the best, and we'll chat soon. And I appreciate everyone out there for watching or listening to this. And this has been your host, Mark Metry.
Hey, you made it to the end of the podcast. It's your host, Mark Metry. And I just want to take a moment here and sincerely acknowledging you for taking the time out of your own day, your own life, to invest it into listening to this podcast, to gain something valuable and implement into your life to make it better. This is what is all about. Now, if you actually gain value from this episode and you want to give me value somehow, I would unbelievably appreciate it if you went to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, if you have an Apple product where you listen to podcasts, and please leave this show a review. You are free to send me a message, email, contact information is in the description below. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get this grassroots movement going.